call the tax committee to order. Members, the first bill up is Senator Pappas, Senate File 3322. Senator Pappas, welcome to the tax committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. This proposal is on behalf of the Office of Higher Education, and I have Mr. Mark Michikanis from the office here with me. The proposal is to change the language in the law to increase the ongoing tax-exempt bond allocation for our self-student loans from $10 million each year to $25 million. The increase in tax-exempt authority would improve the Office of Higher Education's ability to maintain moderate interest rates for student borrowers. They're also seeking language that would authorize state agencies receiving allocations of tax-exempt revenue bonding amounts the authority to transfer among these three agencies with approval of Minnesota Management and Budget. The three agencies are the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency, the Minnesota Office of Higher Education, and the Minnesota Rural Finance Authority. Mr. Chairman, if there's any more information you'd like or you have any questions or more details, Mr. Michikanis can address them.
Questions, members? Came all the way down here.
Say something.
Mr. Chair, for the record, Mark Michikanis with the Office of Higher Education. Senator Pappas pretty well explained the bill. Let me just add to the 2 points in the first section. This actually helps the agencies manage their allocation better. To the extent that they can't sell bonds, one agency can't and another one can, they may cancel because they can't carry it forward, actually helps us manage that process. Right now, entitlement users can transfer money between or allocation between themselves. That's Housing Finance, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Dakota County. This simply kind of extends that to the state agencies that also receive the allocation. And then the second part of the bill, this is on page 3, from the $10 million limitation to $25 million limitation. This is from the unified pool. This is all the money that's kind of left in the second half of the year that nobody else can use. And the way it operates right now, Housing Finance is kind of the last recipient of everything. In the last few years, though, they've essentially gotten hundreds of millions of dollars out of this. And again, they have plans to use it. We can use this right now. We're actually going to doing some refinancing of some bonds this summer. And the way this works, as Senator Pappas mentioned, the more tax-exempt authority we get, the less interest rates we have to charge the students for the loans they take out from the program. And again, just on the process side, Mr. Chair, we've gone through the Department of Management and Budget, Finance, if you will, and all the other agencies. We've had conversations about all of this, and everybody seems to be on board with it.
Okay. Senator Pappas, I think we're going to lay this over, and I've got to look and see if we have any other public finance provisions than just have an article in the tax bill on public finance. If we don't, we'll send it out later. But so for now, Chair Lee is over Senate File 3322 for inclusion in the committee bill.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Okay.
Who's here, Dennis? Senator Kubley. Senator Kubley has Senate File 2224, and we have two other similar bills, I guess. Senator Fredrickson, one. Similar, are these some of them are any statewide?
All of them are statewide.
Are they the same? Forward.
Yes.
We're here.
So his is paid for, the other one's paid for?
No.
Senator Kubley, welcome to the Tax Committee. Senator Fredrickson, welcome. We've got bills on similar issues here. So, Senator Kubley, why don't I think we have an amendment to yours?
I do, Mr. Chair, and Senator Skoy agreed offered for me.
Senator Skoy.
I am looking for the amendment. I would move the A3 amendment.
Senator Skoy moves the A3. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion prevails. Bill is amended. Senator Kubley, to the amended bill.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, as you know, the current situation is that the purchase of products and services used in these 800 megahertz public safety radio systems are exempt in the metro area, plus, the Rochester, St. Cloud, and Itasca County was ready to go, and so they got an exemption earlier. But this bill expands the exemption to the rest of the state, and it's really it's a big deal to the rural counties members. But because of our budget constraints, of course, the tax would be paid up front on this bill and then refunded. The refunds are limited to $1 million annually. And the corporate income tax is modified by disallowing deductions for the real estate investment trust that would offset the cost of this exemption expansion. Section 1 of the bill deals with that disallowing the deduction of dividends from a real estate investment trust if it's not considered a dividend under the IRS code. And then, Section 2 deals with the expansion of the sales tax exemption just from certain areas of the state to the entire state. And Section 3 requires that the governmental entity that owns or contracts for the region-wide public safety radio system apply for the refund. It requires contractors and subcontractors to provide the governmental entity with information on the taxes paid. And it limits refunds for that purpose to no more than $1 million a year. It requires the refunds of both the regular sales tax and the constitutionally dedicated 3H sales tax be refunded from the general fund, but that income is provided to the general fund by the disallowance of the deduction mentioned earlier. There are several people here, Mr. Chair. We've got Jim Franklin from the Sheriff's Association. Scott Wiggins is here from Public Safety if you need him. A couple of county sheriffs are here, and Mr. Apitz is here from Messerly and Kramer as well. So if you need other information, they may be able to answer questions and are willing to do so. But there are also some people here from Meeker County who would like to change at least one of the dates because they've already made some of their purchases, and maybe you'd like to hear from them, Mr. Chair.
Senator Fredrickson, anything further to add?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to add just a couple comments. I think it's a matter of fairness that all the counties in the state be allowed the same exemption from the sales tax that the first counties were. I personally supported the exemption of the sales tax from the first counties, and I think it's fair that it be extended statewide. And this is, at this time with the economic climate we're in, this is a major expense for rural counties. In Lyon County, for example, the system is estimated to cost about $2 million, and the sales tax is $137,500. And they've been under a hiring freeze till just recently. They've made some pretty drastic cuts in their county budget. In Brown County, they estimate the cost is going to be $2,345,000. That'd be about $135,000 with a sales tax. And in Brown County, an agricultural county, they have gone so far as to not hire an extension agent in the county. And in Redwood County, a county of about 20,000 people, the system is estimated to cost $1,800,000, and that's $123,000 of sales tax. Mr. Chairman, I don't know how we're going to pay for this. I'm hoping we can find a way to pay for it, but I think it's fair that these counties be exempt from the sales tax. And it's also an issue of statewide emergency communication. When there is a catastrophe or a need for communication, it helps all the citizens of Minnesota, not just the counties in which these systems happen to be located.
Senator Coolby, is there somebody you prefer to have testify on the bill?
Well, I think it would be good if we could hear from the folks from Meeker County if they would come to the table.
Okay. Who's here from Meeker County? Can speak to some stuff you've already purchased that you'd like to probably get a refund on. I think Itasca County is probably in the same situation, what I've heard previously.
Well, Meeker County...
Your name and who you represent for the record.
Paul Vernig. I'm the county administrator for Meeker County. And Meeker County entered into an agreement with Motorola in December of 2009, and it was basically to redo our dispatch center and then to buy the radios to go on the 800 megahertz system. That contract was approximately $2.7 million, and we're in the process now of implementing that contract, and we have spent a good share of money on that contract already. So the exemption on June 30th, as in the proposed legislation of 2010, would not be a benefit to Meeker County. So if you were to proceed with this here, we'd be one of those counties, and I believe that Kanawha County is another county that would fall within kind of a gap. So we just ask if you are going to move forward with this, that that date would be considered, and that you'd go retro to allow us to gain the exemption. And for us, with all the radios and the equipment purchased, it would be approximately $175,000.
And what date did you enter into that contract with Motorola?
December 18th of 2009.
And we should probably hear from the sheriff from Kanawha County, too, Mr. Chair. They have a date issue also.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Kanawha County.
Yes, good morning. My name's Dan Hartog, the sheriff in Kanawha County. We entered into an agreement with Motorola mid part of 2008. Our system is up and running currently, and we have spent approximately $150,000 with state sales tax to get the system up and running. And that was, the fire service did get a grant, almost $1 million, but they had to pay sales tax when they purchased their equipment. And then Kanawha County bonded nearly $3.8 million. And so far we've paid a little over $90,000 out of that to get the system up and running.
And your contract was entered into when in 2008?
It was mid part of 2008. And our first purchase was November of 2008, when we first paid sales tax.
So that's the date they need to go back to that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Who's here that could speak to the date issue? Are there other counties other than Meeker, than Kanawha, that are in this refund situation? Somebody from the AMC or from...
Mr. Chair, Pat Maduri, Itasca County Sheriff. Our contract was entered in with Motorola in 2006.
When you first purchased, was it?
No, our purchases didn't happen until 2007 for the subscriber stuff, but then we had backbone equipment that actually started being purchased at the middle of 2006.
Mr. Maduri, didn't we give Itasca County some, in the 2008 tax bill, didn't they receive an exemption, or had all the purchases been made, or did you receive an exemption on some of it, or what happened?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, yes, we did. All total, if we were to receive the full exemption, it would have been about $340,000 to $360,000 to Itasca County. Being the legislation came after the fact, we made the majority of our purchases, we've enjoyed less than $10,000 on the sales tax exemption piece.
We scored that money for nothing, Senator Scott.
Oh, I see that.
Thank you, Mr. Maduri. Mr. Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Joe Matthews, Association of Minnesota Counties. You've heard from the only counties that we're aware of that might have an issue with the date. And so I think going forward, other folks are looking to see if there is some possibility of the sales tax exemption being expanded statewide. And I think folks are trying to get a sense of whether they should be waiting with their current purchases or go ahead. And so to what extent we can get an indication this session as to whether or not that's a possibility. I think we're all aware of the economic situation and the fiscal situation here, but those are the only three counties that we're aware of that have already made purchases that might be impacted.
So, Mr. Matthews, how many counties received the exemption initially?
Mr. Chair, I have to apologize. I'm not sure of the exact number. Mr. Wiggins is here. I think he might actually know offhand who was included in that first phase. But I apologize. I don't know off the top of my head exactly how many. I want to say somewhere around, I don't know if it was 20 or so that were in the first wave.
Seven, eight, nine.
Does anybody know?
The metro area, St. Cloud and Rochester is what I'm being told, Mr. Chair.
So something more than seven counties.
Yeah. 25 counties as of right now, Mr. Chair.
Received the exemption.
Correct. And that would be the larger regional areas.
It's for anybody who wants to look up the counties, it's actually in the tax expenditure book. So the counties are listed in there. Mr. Matthews, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Scoy.
Mr. Matthews, do you know how many counties are online to be doing activity in this area in this coming year?
Mr. Chair, Senator Scoy, I can tell you we had our legislative conference about 2 weeks ago, and this was a fairly hot topic. I think all of our counties are trying to look at purchasing this within the next few years. I know some folks are looking at it potentially for this year. They're kind of trying to weigh whether or not it's worth waiting to delay the purchase until this exemption can be expanded. And, you know, at some point we're going to have to go ahead and do this, and they may have to eat the costs, as I think you've heard from some counties that have already done that. And so they're trying to balance the need for a statewide communication system to be up and running before the technology is outdated and we're up onto something else. But I think all of our counties that haven't built us are really taking a serious look at it now.
Thank you, Mr. Matthews. Senator Rosen, would you like to come to the table and tell the tax committee members why you think this is a good idea?
Mr. Chair.
Well, Senator Scoy.
Before Senator Fredrickson leaves, there's room for him. Senator Fredrickson and Senator Kubla, Senator Fredrickson, you return take the 0.375 out of the Natural Resources Arts Fund. And Senator Cooley is proposing to take that out of the general fund. And so that was a difference between the two bills that I picked up on. And I don't know if either one of you want to talk about that. Senator Cooley, I guess you would be the one I would probably direct the question at.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Scoy, I guess, you know, this disallowance of a deduction for real estate investment trusts, you know, generates the same amount of money that would be taken from the general fund, but it does take a fairly long period of time to pay for all of the reimbursements. It looks to me like it could take 8 or 9 years. You know, if you have a better idea, you know, I'd certainly be open to that, but it does seem to me that, as Senator Fredrickson mentioned, it is a fairness issue for the non-metro counties of the state.
Senator Rosen?
Okay.
Good morning.
Thank
Mr.
you.
Chair, members. I have Senate file, what number is it? 2798. And my bill basically just deals with moving forward because there are my counties deal with phase five and they have not implemented ARMOR yet. And Mr. Chair, I was wondering if we could bring Senator Ingebrigtsen up to the table also. He's right there. He's got. I mean, he's an integral part of this. This was his past life, and he can explain a few things. But so the fiscal note, hopefully you all have that in front of you, is 3.4 for 10 and for 11 and 12. And then in 2013, it's 1.7. Comes out of the general fund and a little bit out of the Natural Resources and Arts Fund. But again, as it was mentioned, it is a fairness issue. The system can work, and it should be able to work. But there was phase one and phase two that did get the sales tax exempt. out of the general fund, and so we would just like to have that extended to all the other ones. And, Mr. Chair, is it possible to have Mr. Higgins, Scott Higgins, speak to the committee?
Senator Rosen, thank you. Senator Ingebrigtsen?
Thank you, Mr.
You understand this issue. This is so important. Why aren't you an author of a bill?
That's right. For a couple of years, I've been an author of the bill, as the chair well knows. But, yeah, it's a fairness issue, Mr. Chair and members. And I think we seem to make it quite confusing, and it shouldn't be that confusing. The mandate came down on the counties some 2-3 years ago that all counties will be required to buy this equipment, and this equipment turns out to be quite expensive to get into a statewide group. And there's some different phases, as the way I understand it, it's been going through. The first phase was the Metro St. Cloud with Rochester. Like a lot of things seem to happen, they end up doing it first, obviously, because that's where the population is at, and that's turned out to be a very successful story. I think the I-35W bridge was one of the examples. But in purchasing these this very expensive equipment, they were able to get a sales tax exemption. Very simple as that, the 6.5% sales tax exemption. What I think everybody here today is doing is asking that everybody in the state that's being required to buy it, just like they were, be treated the same. And now we've got a problem where we've got some of the counties that have already went ahead, as Sheriff Maduri has talked about and Candiota County Sheriff Hartung has talked about, they've already purchased, but they had to pay sales tax. They just went ahead. They just couldn't wait because there's a time frame on here when they have to do this. So if I have my bearings in a row, I think that's what we're all doing here today is to say we all 87 counties should be treated the same. It doesn't get any more simpler than that, I don't think. Does that sound reasonable?
The challenge, Senators, is we have no money. I think we all understand that. And to everybody in the audience, the state has a multi-billion dollar deficit, and the effect of this is... I mean, the Department of Finance is forecasting this revenue is going to be collected in the forecast. So if this committee now passes a bill and doesn't collect it, we have to score that as lost revenue to the state's general fund, which means we have to find out a way to replace it. So we have to figure out a way to raise some money in this tax bill if we're going to do this. Senator Ingebrigtsen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just for clarity, maybe for the group that's here, and this group has put countless hours into this, how would the state of Minnesota figure the revenue in counties and in districts in the state of Minnesota that haven't even looked at purchasing yet? How can they even figure in what that revenue is going to be? That's what's puzzling to me.
We have a fiscal note from the Department of Revenue, and they have their best guess. They do that imagine they surveyed counties to find out what counties were going to be making purchases and how much they anticipated the cost of the equipment was going to be. But we have a best guess from the department as to what it's going to be. About $3.4 million in FY11 under Senator Frederickson's and Senator Rosen's bill, just making it exempt. And then we'd have to, if we were going to create a refund for the three counties that have already made purchases, it's going to add a little bit on top of that $3.4 million.
Right.
So,
Mr. Chair, if I could, though, but I think the committee understands the fairness part. You and I have talked about this. We all should be treated the same, and I think that's what we're after here today.
My challenge, Senator Ingebrigtsen, is I would like to do this, but I have to raise somewhere near $4 million in this bill to pay for it. Otherwise, I just make the deficit worse going forward. So I have to have some agreement from the governor that he's willing to let me raise $4 million somehow. I mean, I had a little bill yesterday here that, as long as we have time, that changed for auto repair shops, body shops. Currently, when they buy paint and shop supplies, they pay their sales tax at the wholesale level. And then they don't charge sales tax at the retail level. And the bill changed when the tax is collected so that the body shop wouldn't pay the sales tax when they bought the wholesale supplies. But when they put on the shop supplies on the invoice when you had your car repaired, the customer then would pay the sales tax at the retail level when they paid their bill to the body shop, raised $2.4 million a year because the supplies end up getting marked up rather than at the wholesale price, at the retail price. But what I don't know yet and haven't heard yet is the governor view that as a tax increase or not? I mean, it could be a little piece of revenue that could get us partway to this, but the governor's got some very tight constraints on what he's willing to do relative to new revenue. And it's made the work of this committee pretty difficult because this clearly is something I believe we should try and do. But we can't do it unless we can get the administration to be willing to accept the revenue to pay for it.
And Mr. Chair, I do believe that when it comes to public safety, that does trump a lot of other issues on the plate. And this is truly, when you start looking at what the counties are having to handle, what our public safety in those counties are starting to handle. I serve five counties, not quite as many as I think Senator Frederickson. And how many do you have?
Seven.
Okay. So we're all up here, and we've heard from all of our counties mentioning that this is a tremendous need. And when you start looking at what we did to Sentence to Serve and all the other issues, it piles on pretty hard. So this was definitely, you know, when you hear from all your counties saying, you know, please, can you do something about this? I think it should be looked at good and hard. And, Mr. Chair, is there any way that Mr. Scott Higgins could come
sure.
up and just testify?
Mr. Higgins.
Mr. Chairman and members, for the record, my name is Scott Wiggins. I'm the director of the Division of Emergency Communication Networks at the Minnesota Department of Public Safety. I appreciate you having this hearing here today, and you certainly understand the issue as articulated by the many senators at this table, and also I can't think of a worse time to have a bill like this come before the legislature with a deficit this year and a very significant deficit next year. I would like to just briefly address and clarify a bit about the mandate in which Senator Ingridson talked about. There is no mandate to go to the armor system. However, there is an FCC mandate, and that is to be narrowband compliant. Without getting too technical in the weeds, the reality of the FCC narrowbanding deadline, which is 2013, is going to require just about every two-way radio communication user in the United States of America to update their equipment. So this is not an issue that is separate just to the state of Minnesota. Secondly, I want to try to answer the question of why now. Why do this now when you have a deficit? Next year, you're looking at a very significant deficit, and that is because of the narrowbanding deadline. The 2013 date from the FCC is likely not going to change. That's the message that we've heard loud and clear from the federal government. We update historically radio communications equipment about every 40 years. And this is our chance right now, because the last time this equipment was updated across the state of Minnesota was really the early 70s. And the more entities that we get onto one shared system, the better interoperability, easier it is for our police, fire, EMS, and other emergency responders to communicate to each other. Those interoperable communications issues go away, and it leads to a more effective and efficient response, which is a safety issue not only for the emergency responders, but also the people in which they're providing the services to. So I just appreciate you having this hearing here today. And again, I understand and respect the terrible deficit situation, but if you can find it within the budget to prioritize this. I know it would mean a great deal to every emergency responder that I've had a chance to talk to about this over the last 3 years, and that's from Cook County to Pipestone County to Houston County and up to Kitson County.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Rosen.
I do have a witness from home, from Blue Earth County, Sheriff Lieutenant Tim Moore.
Thank you, Senator Rosen. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Tim Moore. I am with the Blue Earth County Sheriff's Department. I also represent the South Central Minnesota Radio Advisory Committee, which is comprised of 10 counties and two cities in southern Minnesota. I don't want to beat the parity issue to the end of the earth here, because we all know where that is. More importantly, I think one of the things with the sales tax exemption With the mandate, we are being required to purchase radio equipment that goes out to public safety, which is the first response and the response that's dependent on most. One of the things that we have been able to do is secure a few federal grants for some of the purchases that we must make. Specifically, what the sales tax does is it reduces the effectiveness and the dollars that we can use from the federal government to buy equipment. Having to pay sales tax on top of grant money reduces our ability to buy radios. In my county alone, we're going to spend roughly $2.5 to $2.7 million for infrastructure upgrades, and that tax will be about $160,000. Of that amount of money, that's just about enough to outfit our entire sheriff department and our public works department so we can buy the upgraded equipment. So that is one of the issues that would be an argument for granting the exemption. And I understand the issue of we're in tight times and stuff. The other issue that is important to all of us would be the fact that if we don't have the monies, it's going to pass the burden back on to the taxpayers and create further burdens down the road. The other issue that we really look at is with the grant dollars that we are getting, they also come with timelines. Currently, as you've heard from the testifiers before, there are timelines that we must spend some of the money. We're trying to hold off as long as we can to find out a direction that we can go. Unfortunately, when we run into the hard line of having to spend some monies, my county alone, as well as several of our southern counties, have a deadline of September 30th, 2010, where we must spend grant dollars for radio equipment. However, we're kind of in a parity where the system isn't ready for us to come on, and we don't know exactly when that time frame will be. So we buy these radios and this equipment, it sits on the shelves, and the warranty continues to start from the time that we take delivery. So for all the users, for the radio advisory committees, the region radio boards, we are asking that you seriously consider granting the exemption to the entire state to help us all move forward towards achieving a public safety system of communications.
So, Sheriff Moore, when you go out for a contract, are there multiple vendors? I mean, how many vendors bid on these kind of contracts?
In my area, we deal with about two of them. Motorola, not to drop names or anything, but Motorola is probably one of the leaders for this technology. And I'd say probably out of the 87 counties, 85, 84 of them all use Motorola products. Motorola has been the one that is the one in the forefront. They really researched the technology and brought it to the level that we need it at.
How do we assure that if we grant the exemption that Motorola or the other vendor doesn't just raise the price of the product by 6.875%?
That's a good question, and it's kind of the same thing that we're running against, too.
I mean, if there's a good competitive environment out there, I don't think that would happen. But
part of the issue also runs with the technology is not available with some of the other vendors that we've had.
Mr. Chair, I think
Senator Rosen.
Mr. Franklin just whispered to us that there is a state bid contract, and the bids are already been let. So, I think the contract's already in place.
Also, it's just a matter of the counties exercising their equipment under that current contract.
Exactly.
That's helpful.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pogelmaner.
Mr. Chairman, I was out of the room, so I might have missed this, but When we first started doing this, I think the essence of my question is, with this exemption, will the proportion of state, local, federal share stay the same as it's been in the other parts of the state, or will this change the balance of state, local, federal share in other parts of the state?
Because I know there's been state, there was state money involved here at one point.
Bonding, if I remember right. Pardon? Is it bonding?
Yeah.
I believe so.
And I'm just, I don't, the argument seems to be that this levels the playing field, and I'm just asking that question. Does this level the playing field, or does this provide an advantage to some communities?
Mr. Higgins?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Pogemiller, these bills shouldn't change the balance between local funding, state funding, and federal funding. We've been seeking and utilizing grant dollars for this project for a long time, and there are always going to be some cities and counties that end up getting more and some that end up getting less, based largely on what we get for federal grant dollars. But this sales tax exemption and the percent of it is relatively small in comparison to some of the other grants that the regions have received to help offset their cost of transition onto the ARMR system.
Senator Pogemiller.
So is there more grant money available now than there was in the past? Is it paying for more of the system than in the past, or is it the reverse of that, or is it about the same?
Mr. Chair, members, it's really kind of all over the place. Some of the early adopters didn't get many grant opportunities, and then some of the people that kind of came next in the metropolitan area got a fair amount of grant dollars, and then some of the folks in St. Cloud and Rochester really benefited the best because it was the time when the federal government was sending over $30 million to the state of Minnesota in Homeland Security funds. Well, those days are over. The total pot of money now that comes into the state of Minnesota is about $12 million. So nobody is going to be able to benefit with grant dollars like some of those other regions did or areas did, 5 or 10 years ago.
Senator Pogemiller.
So did the metro area pay for it with property tax dollars?
Mr. Chairman.
I keep trying to get at the same question. The early adopters, did they mostly pay for it locally?
Mr. Chairman and members, yes, and that's what's going to happen with the counties in greater Minnesota as well. I mean, you heard Lieutenant Moore talk about this is a $2.5 or $2.6 million commitment for Blue Earth County, and I don't know what the sales tax exemption would be for them, but maybe somewhere in the range of $150,000. The rest of those funds are going to come from the local taxpayers, just as they have in Bloomington and Minneapolis and St. Paul and other parts of the state.
Senator Pogemiller.
And I'm trying to get a sense of the proportion of that.
Sure. And, Mr. Chair and members, on average, I would say, and it's, again, it's difficult to say it's been consistent across the board because it has fluctuated with what federal grant opportunities have been available. But traditionally, across the state, the local units of government get approximately 25% in grant dollars. It's been more in some areas, it's been less in some areas, but it's around 25%. Now we have a situation, Mr. Chair, where we have about 14 counties that are operating day-to-day on the ARMR system. We have another 56 counties that have passed a resolution indicating that ARMR is their best option, are at some point in the process of migrating onto the ARMR system. So we have many, many more counties seeking to transition on the ARMR system and, of course, fewer grant dollars available because we have fewer grant dollars coming from the federal government than we had 5 or 7 years ago.
Senator Pogemiller.
So I wonder if we just could get a listing of the systems that have been built out and how they were paid for.
Mr. Wiggins, do we have anything like that by county? How much grant money was available by county?
Mr. Chair, I do not have that information, and it would be pretty difficult to pull that information together because there were some counties that got grants that we were never aware of. So, for example, you have counties that get AFG grants. Those grants go directly from the federal government right to the counties. We are not made aware of those grants, so it would be pretty difficult. One of the counties got a COPS grant. Again, that's a direct from, I believe, the Department of Justice to that particular county. It's hard to quantify what the counties have received in grants.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Pogemiller, what I heard him say, and Mr. Wiggins, correct me if I misunderstood this, but what I heard him say is we have more counties coming on, and we have less grant dollars available for these more counties. So that would lead me to think that these more counties are actually going to have to more of a property tax burden than the ones that were earlier, because there were more federal grant dollars available for those early and mid people. I think that's what I heard him say.
Mr. Wiggins, is that accurate?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Skoy, it's just different in every county because it's different based on the amount of users that you have. It's different based on how many councils you have in your public safety and answering point. It's different based on how you make the connection into the system. It's just really different in every single county. Some will pay more. Some might pay less.
Senator Perlmutter.
I think the earliest adopters did it mostly locally. And it might be fine to subsidize it. That might just be fine. I'm just curious, what is the breakdown? Some people have larger tax bases than others. I don't have a problem there. I'm just curious what the situation is.
Senator Ingebrigtsen, you made the fairness argument. Have any of the counties, previous 23 counties, paid sales tax on the equipment purchases? I mean, Itasca apparently did, and apparently Meeker and Kandy, yeah, Ojai did. Are there any others?
I think everybody that has purchased equipment from the first phase on has paid a sales tax.
Mr. Wiggins?
Mr. Chair, it's before my time. I don't know for a fact. There may have very well been some real early adopters that were first on the system that paid sales tax. I don't know that for a fact. I don't know when the initial sales tax exemption was put into law.
Does anybody know? Mr. Apitz? Can we make room for Mr. Apitz?
That's okay. I can just stand here. Mr. Chairman, John Apitz with law firm of Messerly and Kramer, and we represent the Motorola Corporation. We've been involved with this since 1993 when it was a concept, and once the concept was given authorization by the legislature, the metro area came on board, and to Senator Pogemiller's question about funding mechanisms, Mr. Wiggins is correct. There were lots of different sorts of pools of money and sources of money that went into particularly the metro area to help finance some of this. But very early on, one of the original requests from the metro counties was for a sales tax exemption, which was granted. I think you could look at the legislative history in the statute, and you'd see that. And then subsequently, other counties were allowed to be given the same authority. As the various phases of this project, 1 through 6, were put into place, 1 was the metro area, 2 was further out, 3 and 4, and these are in the latter phases that are asking for that sales tax exemption. So early on, they did receive they all received a sales tax exemption on the purchases of equipment.
Should be easy to fix.
Sure. Thank you. Could somebody tell me what the range of these main base towers are? Is the equipment needs? Obviously you have to have more radios in the cars, but I would assume that the towers and the transmitters are the most expensive part of this. Do you need a lot more transmitters if you have more people also, or how does that work?
Mr. Chairman and members, the current armor plan calls for 328 towers across the state. And the way the system is designed, and I fear that I'll really get into the technical weeds here and lose you, but the way that the system is designed is to use radio spectrum more efficiently. And that's done through trunking. And by using that spectrum more efficiently, you can put many more users on the system than if everybody just goes out and uses a conventional system like they're doing today. The towers are about 20 miles apart. And many of them are already constructed today, and there are more to be constructed.
So, Mr. Chair, 20 miles if you're in Kitson County or if you're in Ramsey County?
Mr. Chair, the state is providing a base level of coverage, and local units of government can increase that coverage if they so desire. So in Minneapolis, Hennepin County, a lot of the metropolitan area counties, at their own expense, they have built additional towers closer together to have effectively better in-building coverage, better portable coverage. So the spacing of towers in Greater Minnesota is consistent with what was provided in the metropolitan area from the state. Rather, the local units of government in the metropolitan area have spent a lot of their own resources to increase that level of coverage, which Greater Minnesota counties could do as well, but traditionally they don't because they don't need to.
And Mr. Chair, all of that was eligible for this sales tax exemption?
Mr. Chair and members, to the best of my knowledge, yes. Again, there may have been a few early adopters that didn't get it. I'm not entirely sure on that.
Thank you.
Any other questions, members? Senator Stundrum.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to go back to Senator Scoy's question a bit as he tried to think through this, and I think he was saying that as going forward, as there are fewer grants or maybe more reliance on property tax, and I kind of heard an answer, well, maybe, maybe not, but it would seem that would be the logical case in most cases, at least if you look at it at a per capita basis. If you look at it at a per capita basis, would not that be generally true, at least generally true?
Senator Wiggins?
Mr. Chair and members, again, it all depends on grants. Candy, Ohio County, for example, they asked for a AFG grant, and they got almost $1 million to outfit all of their fire agencies in their county. So their per capita costs are going to be less than maybe a neighboring county next door that didn't get that. It is just different in every county based on what they get for grants.
Okay. Senator Sundrum.
Mr. Chair, and I'm not sure where we are procedurally, but and since Senator Rosen is not, I'm not sure if she's presented a bill yet or not, or if she's going to today.
I think, Mr. Chairman, the Senator Rosen's bill is principally the same as Senator Fredrickson's.
Mr. Chair, I do have an amendment. Again, understanding the discussion is probably just for a matter of a record to Senator Rosen's bill, which would deal with, if you will, kind of filling the gap, those people that came, and it's the A1 amendment, Mr. Chair.
Senator Sundrum, why don't we lay Senator Kubley's bill on the table, which is what number?
It's 2224, Mr. Chair.
Chair lays Senate File 2224 on the table for possible inclusion in the committee bill.
As amended.
As amended. And Senator Fredrickson's bill, Senate File 2545, will also lay on the table for inclusion. And I think Senator Rosen, your bill 2798 is now in front of the committee. Senator Senja.
And, Mr. Chair, then I would move to amend, let's see, it's Senate File 2798 with the A1 amendment. And I'll let it get passed out. Essentially, though, the A1 amendment simply, if you will, fills the gap. Those that followed the Twin Cities, the metropolitan area, St. Cloud and Rochester, who have implemented their systems, who have paid their sales tax, this would look to retroactive reimbursement for their sales tax expenses that they've incurred in implementing the ARMOR system. That's the sense of this amendment. And, Mr. Chair, understanding this is difficult, we don't know where we're going to find the money, but I just want to offer this as into the record so that as we contemplate this,
purchases in 07.
This might be also contemplated.
Senator Sundrum, I see this goes back to purchases made for December 31st, 2007. And I think we heard Itasca County actually made purchases in 07. Is that what I heard, Chair Pandurie?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it actually goes back to the middle of 06 when we signed the contract. When was part of 06, we started purchases in the middle of 06.
Middle of 06.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Sundrum.
And maybe I can defer to Senator Ingebrigtsen. He helped me with this amendment. Actually, this was an amendment that he had drafted, and I'm caring for him. Where are we on the date, Senator Ingebrigtsen, in your mind?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Senjum, then maybe just a simple oral amendment would change that back to the date that the sheriff from Pat Maduri just talked about. Maybe that would be just as simple as doing that, and I think that would probably cover it.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Senator Senjum, let me have counsel suggest what we have to do to include, make sure Itasca County is included.
Thank you.
If there's more than one place, I see line 2.2, we need to make a date change. Is there any place else, counsel?
Mr. Chair, starting on page 1, line 17, assuming that these purchases were after July 1st, 2006, if the county could clarify that, then we would delete December 31, 2007, and insert July 1, 2006. And then, again, as you mentioned, Mr. Chair, on page 20, or on page 2, line 20, you're going to delete December 31, 2007, and insert July 1, 2006.
Sheriff Maduri, did you make any purchases before July 1st, 2006?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, if we did, they probably weren't very significant. A lot of it came after July 1st.
Chair, could I move that amendment to the amendment?
Senator Senjum moves an oral amendment to the A1 on line 1.1. Who else would like to speak to the amendment?
Mr. Chairman, as a member of the committee, I'm with the City of St. Cloud, and I keep hearing that the City of St. Cloud received a sales tax exemption. We were in the same boat as Itasca County. When we purchased the lion's share of our equipment, the bill didn't relate to us. We ended up paying sales tax on our system, and then the sales tax exemption went in after the fact.
What year was that?
2004.
Oh.
And that's the problem you're going to have with us trying to go back. What we're looking for is we've purchased our system. We're on the system going. The City of St. Cloud has a 14-county hazmat contract. We're trying to get members that we work with onto the system going forward, and we look at the sales tax exemption as a way to help expedite and get those other counties onto the system.
We need your name for the record.
Micah Myers, I'm with the City of St. Cloud.
It just never ends.
Senator Senjum?
Mr. Chair, does this need a little more work?
It probably does, but let's put your oral amendment on, and then we'll talk with somebody. Senator Senjum incorporates the following oral amendment to his A1. On line 1.17, to delete December 31, 2007, and insert July 1, 2006. And on line 2.2, delete December 31, 2007, and insert July 1, 2006. On the Senjum A1 amendment as amended, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. The motion prevails. A1 is adopted to the Rosen bill. Senator Rosen, anything further on your bill?
No, that is it. I think we had some good testimony to figure out exactly the ins and outs. I do want to say the Federal Commission Communication Committee, the FCC, is the mandate to narrowband is January 1st of 2012, which is 20 months away. So the mandate is coming quickly.
Members, Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I will certainly commit to helping clean all this stuff up here, as we talked about getting all the departments that are involved here, working with the Sheriff's Association, Public Safety Directors, and the whole gamut, and give them a timeline, I guess, until so we can bring something to the committee here that they're going to know exactly what it is. And
Senator Ingebrigtsen, if you could find out for us if there are purchases made before July 1, 2006, I think that would be helpful to us, that we're not tax exempt.
Right.
In the next week or so?
Yes, I would do that.
Anything else, members? Any members at the table?
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Frederickson.
We understand the sales tax exemption leaves a $3.5 million problem for all of us in the state budget. But I'd like to emphasize again that the county's paying, in the counties I represent, around $130,000 of sales tax is also quite an expenditure for the counties, because they've already made some pretty painful reductions in their budget, and this will be on top of those reductions. So it has a significant impact on the counties, too, to pay this sales tax.
Yeah. Senator Kubley, anything further?
I don't think I have anything further, Mr. Chair. I echo Senator Fredrickson's comments there.
Charlie is over Senate File 2798 as amended. Thank you, members.
Mr. Chairman, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pogemiller.
I hope someone would try to prepare a summary who's paid what as this has been rolled out over the years.
I think
that would affect my decision as to whether we should come up with this kind of money or not.
Senator Ingebrigtsen's going to work on that, correct? He's connected to the Sheriff's Association, so...
And I mean what happened in the metro area. I just don't know. I mean,
well, what we know for sure is they didn't pay the sales tax.
We know that for sure, but we also, I just don't remember who paid for it. And it'd be nice to know. I'm absolutely not opposed to subsidizing in some fashion. I just would like to know what playing field is.
It was, Mr. Chair, yes, Senator Pogemiller, it was interesting listening to the agency guy, I can't remember his name, Mr. Wiggins, he said one county got $1 million grant for their sheriff's equipment, and the neighboring county didn't get anything, so one county basically didn't have hardly any local effort, and the neighboring county, you know, did it all. That's really interesting how that would work out. I don't know if there's any way to get a list of, is there 17 counties that are fully implemented now, I thought I heard him say, what those 17 counties have breaks out, it should be available.
Senator Ingebrigtsen, get us as much information as you can from the sheriffs.
And to Senator Pogemiller's point, you want to know how they were funded, whether it was bonding, whether it was grant money. That's fair. Yeah.
We can get that within a week. That would be helpful. Senator Vandeveer? Senator Vandiver, welcome to the Tax Committee. Senate File 3036 is now in front of the committee. Senator Vandiver.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, Senate File 3036 is intended to encourage use of energy management systems in homes and businesses in order to reduce the amount of energy actually used and to plan and implement other energy saving decisions. And here to explain what the management system is and what the bill basically provides a 50% tax credit for the purchase of those. But I do have an amendment, Mr. Chair, that clarifies that the tax credit would not, you know, cross over other subsidies, so that it would not be, the state would not be subsidizing energy management systems that received any other subsidies. So that would be the A1 amendment, if the committee would entertain, someone would entertain offering it.
Senator Pogemiller moves the A1 amendment. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion prevails. A1 is adopted. Senator Vandiver.
Mr. Chair. So if the committee is okay with it, Mr. Nujar can explain briefly what we're talking about when we talk about an energy management system and what it actually does.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members,
An energy management system.
Your name for the record, please.
Oh, I'm sorry. Steve Newjar.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you. An energy management system is an electronic system which is designed to monitor the electricity in the home and help people control that, and also the use of the gas, natural gas in homes. It's a small but kind of sophisticated system. You can see with the handout that I gave you, it really does two things. With the electricity, it's helping you manage what are called standby loads, which are things that run constantly, device chargers, AV equipment, things that are on even when they're not on. And then they also help with things that are running when you don't need them on.
Seems weird.
If you're gone for extended periods of time at work, that sort of thing, water heaters, other things like that really could be shut off to save energy, as well as the thermostat changing. And you can really add up some of the savings. I've included a chart which takes a kind of a typical house and shows what kind of savings you could have within, say, a year or so. And what we're proposing is that the cost of a homeowner putting in this system or a business owner would be able to get a credit for 50% of the cost. That would help with the payback of it. And, yes, the homeowner wins because they get the payback, which happens every year, but also the grid wins, you know, for the energy system. For every kilowatt hour that you save in the home, you actually save 1.3 that's manufactured because you have some losses over the power lines.
Mr. Newjar, the TV commercial that says that your cell phone charger draws power even when your phone's not connected to it, it's plugged into your outlet. Is that true?
Mr. Chair, yes, it is. It's a relatively small amount, but what happens is if you look at the devices that are in the home, they actually do add up over time. Those aren't the only devices. Obviously, you have other things. Probably the biggest offenders are things like plasma televisions and AV equipment that stay in a ready state, so that when you push the button and turn them on, they come on instantly. They're actually drawing power to stay in that ready state.
Even when they're shut off?
Even when they're shut off, Mr. Chair, yes.
How about my toaster?
No, your toaster would not be on that list, Mr. Chair.
What if it pre-warms?
Senator
Pogba.
I've got one. I probably should get a new one. It's probably dangerous, but if you plug it in with the prongs like this, it doesn't work. If you flip it over and plug it in the other way, it does work. I think I got a problem.
Mr. Newjar, does polarity matter on a toaster?
Mr. Chair, not that I'm aware, no. It's
AC
current.
That's why there's something wrong with this toaster.
Wrong with the toaster or wrong with the electrical outlet?
No, with the toaster.
The toaster?
Because I do have to kind of go like this, too.
So there's more going on. Senator Pokemon, how many years have you had it?
Oh, a lot. Maybe 1970s.
Mr. Newjar, what do one of these systems cost?
They're about a typical system, or a basic system, I should say, Mr. Chair, is about $2,300 installed. Obviously, the larger homes would have a little bit more money, but the basic system includes the key components already. It would just be incremental cost after that, depending on the switching of the lights and devices and things like that.
And, Mr. Newjar, then what if a homeowner paid $2,300 for one of these? I mean, how many years could they anticipate the payback being?
Mr. Chair, the payback would probably be a year to a year and a half, depending on the energy usage that they have.
And, Mr. Newjar, why are people not doing it if the payback's that quick?
Mr. Chair, it's a new category. A lot of people are not aware of it. A lot of homes have electronics which are based on convenience or entertainment, but this is the first of a category which is actually going to actually help them save money. It does work for them. A lot of people are not aware of it, but a lot of people are very reluctant right now to spend more money.
Are there a number of companies that make the device?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Yeah.
There's more than one vendor, Mr. Chair.
we sure don't want to do something that only benefits one company, Senator Vandiver. Do it.
Some of us thunk of that before, too.
Any other questions, members? Chair lays over Senate File 3036 as amended for possible inclusion. Senator Vandiver, Mr. Nuchar, thank you for coming in.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Members, I'm really intrigued why, if the cost of making the tax credits about six, well, it's just a subtraction from income. That's why it scores, it only scores at $60,000. Okay, Senator Anderson. Senator Anderson has for us, members, Senate File 2688. Senator Anderson, welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee members. We really appreciate having a hearing on this bill today. Senate File 2688 creates an income tax checkoff on your income tax or property tax form, which would allow you to make a voluntary donation to help the homeless or to contribute to our food shelves. I'll explain the poster in a moment, but I'm really excited to bring this bill forward today because it's the great idea of a young person in my district, and that's Arthur Nguyen, who is here with us today, and he was excused from school, even though it's finals week, and he actually had a lot of classmates that wanted to come with him in support of this bill, but because it's finals at the senior high school, it was difficult for any of the other ones to get permission to leave. So we also have Dan Kennedy, who's his guidance counselor from Johnson Senior High on the east side of St. Paul. And as you probably all know, Johnson is in a neighborhood that is a real struggling working class neighborhood. It's not a wealthy area. And Arthur has been an unbelievable leader in that community and in that school, and has come up with a fantastic idea based on a lot of years of work that he's done along with other students to help people who are struggling economically. So I think it's something that is really an uninspiring story. And when he came to me with the idea that they wanted to do more to help people in need, they came up with this idea, brought it to me, and of course I wanted to make it happen and see if we could pass legislation to do this. So I'm going to let them talk about why they want to do this briefly, if you would give us that time. But just briefly to explain the bill, we only have one. Well, I guess we still have a political checkoff, but the chickadee checkoff is the income tax checkoff that we're most familiar with in Minnesota, and that's a voluntary donation that goes to the non-game wildlife program, and it's been incredibly successful in Minnesota. It raises over $1 million every year. That goes to protect birds and, you know, songbirds and other kinds of non-game species in Minnesota. And we've looked around at what other states have done, and some states have lots and lots of checkoffs. And so I guess the obvious question is, are we going to go down a slippery slope if we open it up to another checkoff? I hope we don't open it up to lots of checkoffs, because I think that could dilute the purpose. But in this case, I think what these students have come up with is something that is very targeted and will have very broad appeal to lots and lots of Minnesotans. Minnesotans are very generous in donating, but the beauty of a tax checkoff is it makes it very simple, very obvious, and purely voluntary. So if you have a little bit of extra money coming back, it's real easy to check it off and say, I want to help people in need, or if you're paying, you know, give a few dollars more to help people in need. I think it could attract a whole new pool of donors to these really great causes. And that's our theory about this checkoff, that it would appeal to lots and lots of Minnesotans who might not be as interested in supporting wildlife, but would be interested in supporting people. And they're both really good causes. So I think it's a good idea, and it doesn't cost the state anything. We have, the way the bill is set up, we have an amendment that will designate exactly where the money would go, and we're proposing splitting it 50-50 to the food shelf program and the other 50% to the emergency services grants. And we have Liz Capala from the Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless who can talk briefly about why those emergency services grants are a really good place to target this funding, because it's a fairly small amount that we would anticipate, but enough to make a big difference on a small scale. We also have in our amendment, we have two amendments. The A4 amendment would identify where the funds would go and make it clear that this money would supplement existing funding. We would not want this to be an excuse to cut state funding for those critical programs. So this would be intended to increase state funding that's available. We also have an A5 amendment, which I would leave up to the committee, that would say that the cost, the administrative cost of the program, which would be very small, could be covered by the proceeds of the donations, that would take, you know, the first donations that would come in would cover the administrative costs, which I think are projected to be around $40,000. And so I would leave that up to the committee if you wanted to include that amendment as well, so that the cost would be self-supporting. Yes, definitely. And so, Mr. Chair, why don't I stop?
Senator Anderson, let's get the bill in the shape you want it. Senator Pogelman moves the A4 amendment. So, Senator Anderson, what does the amendment do?
The amendment divides up the money and says 50% will go to homeless prevention and services through the emergency services grants at DHS, and 50% would go to the food shelf program. So there'd be no, you know, bureaucratic decision-making about where the money goes. It would be simple. It would be just 50% goes to this program and 50% to existing programs. And there's also at line 1.24 to 1.26 makes it clear, I think as Mr. Chair you had suggested, that this would be required to supplement traditional funding. It wouldn't be used to substitute for existing state dollars, so that we would be increasing the amount of support that we give to people in need.
On the A4 amendment, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion prevails. A4 is adopted.
And then, Mr. Chair, as I said, the other amendment, it's really up to the committee, if you, and you could save that for later discussion, I suppose, but that would allow you to pay for the administrative costs out of the proceeds of the donations if you need this to be revenue neutral.
And the Senator Anderson, the preliminary fiscal note from the department shows a cost of about $88,000 in 11. Imagine that's the cost of changing the form, and about $44,000 in 12 and in 13 on an annual basis.
Correct.
So is there an amendment to do that?
There is. That's the A5 amendment.
What's the wishes of the committee about the department's costs? Should we take it out of the money that's raised through the program?
What happened, Mr. Chair? What happens with the non-game fund? Is that administrative cost taken out of the fund, or does the department just absorb it?
Is anybody here from the department? Ms. Cadoon, I think, whoever wants to come up. Ms. Cadoon, Senator Skoy's question is, what happens in the case of the chickadee checkoff? Are the costs taken out of the money that's raised, or are they absorbed by the state's general fund?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I believe it's just absorbed by the general fund. We don't have a special appropriation, as far as I know, similar to what's being proposed in this amendment.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Cadoon. Senator Anderson, testifiers, sir?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd really like to ask Dan Kennedy. He's the guidance counselor who actually came up with this idea, and Arthur Nguyen, who the student from who's been organizing support for it, and
Liz Capala from the Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless. So I don't know who wants to go first.
Go ahead. I'm Dan Kennedy. It's great to be here. I'm honored. And I do want to mention Arthur definitely was a part of this. We worked together, and some of you have met us through lobbying efforts and know about the story. But 2 years ago, four students came to Johnson High School. They came to see me, and they wanted to make a difference in their community. And we banded together. Arthur was one of the four. And do you want to name the four students, please?
Sampos Newell, Javen Miller-Murphy, and Peng Lower, and myself, Arthur Nguyen, as well.
And so we came together, and they wanted to see if they could raise some money. And I thought, well, maybe we would spend a day out of our summer vacation, a day a week, doing this. It turned out we spent probably 4 or 5.
We basically spent our entire summer.
Our entire summer, yeah. and the weekends. Yeah. We bagged groceries. We held a benefit dinner. TST Creative Catering, the owner, donated all the food and the space. Every Sunday we bagged groceries and took donations and, of course, knocked on many thousands of doors. And try raising money on the east side. It's not an easy proposition. But the end result was we raised over $21,000. And so Arthur's incredible. He's ranked number one in his class for 3 years. He's an incredible student. But we wanted to help people, and we really believe this bill is about people, helping Minnesota families, not just people who are homeless, but also Minnesota families who are struggling. And if you did read recently the Wilder report that just came out, there's an increase of
27%.
So this is really impacting Minnesota and Minnesota families, and hopefully, you know, I respectfully ask you to consider this bill and the merits of it.
Mr. Chair and the committee, well, as Senator Anderson said, this is our idea. It's basically voluntary, so anyone can do it. Especially now, people are relying on these food shelves for temporary supply of food, so no one deserves to be denied the food. So, I mean, this is simple, and it will help the food shelves, food banks that are low in supply for the high demand.
Our idea was simply to make it easier, too, because if it is, and again, the argument would be you're opening up the door and every organization and will want to get in on this. But, you know, it's been around for how long has the checkoff been there?
Oh, I forget. Many, since
12 years.
Like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and so the point is so far there's just the one DNR checkoff. And, again, we really agree that our natural resources are important, and I think people from up on the Iron Range would agree. But we also need to recognize that our people who, through no fault of their own, whether they lost a home or they had some sort of tragedy or crisis, they're homeless and they need our help and they need food. So I think this makes it easy for taxpayers to simply check off. And to give. It makes it much easier. So we hope you'll support it.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm one of those Iron Rangers who likes both birds and people, as most of us do.
Need your name for the record.
Sure. My name is Liz Quapple. I work as Executive Director of the Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless. We're a network of 150 homeless service providers across the state. I'm here today to offer our strong support for Senate File 2688 and to just speak a little bit to the need. We have a homelessness crisis in our state. As you just heard, Wilder Research Center recently announced preliminary findings from their triennial study of homelessness and found a staggering 27% increase in the number of homeless families with children. That's a 27% increase since 2006. This 27% increase doesn't count the thousands of people who are staying in their grandmother's basement or doubled up in a friend's apartment or bouncing from cousin to brother-in-law to neighbor. This 27% increase is only the number of people staying in homeless programs or on the street. Wilder's study also found over 1,200 homeless unaccompanied youth on the night of the survey, 1,200 every night. We so appreciate that Arthur and his group have worked so hard on this idea to help their peers who are not as fortunate as they are. 1,200 homeless youth every night. We can do better than this. Wilder reports again, that roughly one-third of our homeless population is in greater Minnesota. The coalition recently took researchers from the federal GAO, Government Accountability Office, on a tour of rural homelessness. We heard heartbreaking stories of struggle, families who sleep in their cars during the day when it's warmer and roam 24-hour stores during the night, a laid-off divorced man living in his buddy's fish house, a young family that lugged boards down a cliff to a mine pit to create a makeshift shelter, a man who lived outside in a rural town for 20 years and is now finally stably housed, a single woman talked about the dangers of sleeping in a tent, and teens discussed with us trading sex for a warm place to stay. We believe Minnesota can do better. Half the money generated from this bill would fund the Emergency Services Grants, a flexible program that provides emergency shelter for homeless people or helps people access permanent housing, the medical or psychiatric help they need to maintain housing, employment counseling or job placement, substance abuse treatment, emergency child care, transportation, and other services they need to stabilize their housing. At the Coalition, we're huge fans of the flexibility of the program. We like that it's available statewide. Local units of government or nonprofits can apply. The program is very successful, but woefully underfunded. Currently receives only $350,000 a year. We had a one-time funding in the 08-09 biennium, an additional $600,000, but that went away. And so we lost funding for Ascension Place, St. Anne's in Hennepin County, Dakota Woodlands in Eagan, the Housing Coalition of St. Cloud, Interfaith Hospitality Network of Rochester, Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe, People Serving People in Minneapolis, Freeport West in Minneapolis, Lifehouse in Duluth, Northwest Community Action in Badger, all lost their funding for this program. And then significant cuts to RISE, Transitional Housing in Anoka, Evergreen Youth Shelter in Bemidji, Intercounty Community Council, Mahubi Community Action, Otter Tail Wadena Community Action. Lots of people available to provide these services, lots of need all across the state. We know that it would be put to good work right away. The other half of the funds would go to the Minnesota Food Shelf Program. That's a program I don't work with directly, but I know benefits the population we do work with. The Food Shelf Program is funded currently at $2.5 million for the biennium, distributed to 300 food shelves across the state via Hunger Solutions through a formula set by law. Last year, there were 2.8 million visits to food shelves, and 60 million pounds of food were distributed. 2.8 million visits to food shelves and 60 million pounds of food were distributed. Half of that food went to children or seniors. We know that even though those numbers are staggering, the demand is increasing. We don't have the exact numbers yet, but we've heard anecdotally reports from between 30% to 90% increases in need demand depending on locale around the state. So we think this is very important. One of my other hats I wear, as some of you know, is city council member in Eveleth, and I know what it's like to struggle with tight budgets and cuts all the time. And so we like that this program doesn't really cost money. I mean, and we agree with Senator Anderson that it'll be a way for advocates to just get people who want to help. Minnesotans are compassionate and generous people. Minnesotans know that ending homelessness makes sense for families. Ending homelessness saves tax dollars. Ending homelessness is good for communities. We believe that if given the option, they would contribute to this program. So thanks for your consideration, and please support this bill.
Mr. Chair.
Ms. Kupala.
Sorry.
The Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless, how much, is there a state appropriation there?
We get no money from the state.
And how do you raise money?
We make phone calls, and we're a nonprofit, just a small nonprofit, and we get money through individual donations and foundation grants. Those have obviously been going away. We're just a small staff. We provide advocacy, kind of public education for homeless awareness stuff, but we have a network of providers, 150 around the state, who pay small dues, $100 to $400 a year to us. And those are the programs we try to come to the Capitol to advocate for funding to go to those programs that are really working directly with people, serving people experiencing homelessness or preventing it.
So they pay dues to an umbrella organization of which you...
Yes, that's correct.
So are there state grants that they access in addition to the state appropriation? Or federal grants, or where do they?
Yeah, they get, so AEOA up in your neck of the woods gets a combination for their homeless services programs. They get a little bit of this emergency services grant money, but obviously $350,000 doesn't go very far across the state. They combine that with some, there's family homeless prevention money from MHFA, state money. They try to cobble it together with other things. They some federal CDBG money goes into their homeless programs. So they try to cobble together several different resources.
Thank you. Senator Anderson?
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to mention we did just a little bit of work in the community trying to find supporters, and it was pretty easy to find supporters. We have a letter from Mayor Chris Coleman, who's a strong supporter of this bill, Catholic Charities from Minneapolis-St. Paul. Actually, and when I met the CEO down there, I was serving food one day and talked to him about this, and he was really excited to be a supporter. Shelter Provider Action Association and the St. Paul Area Coalition for the Homeless. These are just local groups in the Twin Cities that we found, but obviously this would be something that would be critically important and would serve people in every county of this state, and that's where the need is, everywhere in Minnesota. I think, Mr. Kennedy, do you want to talk about the poster real quick?
Yes. This is from Parkview Elementary School in White Bear Lake, and they heard about the story, and it was kind of neat that there's been some media coverage of the story. And Arthur and I went and gave a presentation to all the elementary grades, and you can see they actually wanted to have their parents come in and sign it as well. So I know third graders and fourth and first and second graders probably aren't your constituents, but certainly for some of you their parents are. But this is from White Bear Lake, and I think the nice thing about this bill is it really can help, I believe, all constituents in the state of Minnesota and make a difference and make it easy for people to give and to help, as was said. So, no, we had an outpouring of support, and I think just from our own lobbying efforts as well as your lobbying efforts, there hasn't been any opposition and bipartisan support. So hopefully you'll support this as well.
Senator Anderson, I know you understand the very austere budget situation the state is in. If we continue down this path, and it seems like the spending committees, when they don't have money to appropriate, this is where they come. Understanding that the next budget's going to be much more difficult than the one we're currently going through, and some programs are probably going to go by the wayside. How are we going to find some assurance that going forward, more and more groups aren't going to want to get themselves on the tax form as a way to raise money? I mean, that's my only concern is next year somebody's going to come with another really good idea, and maybe two. And I just, I mean, it's a very, very neat idea. But when you understand where the state is headed with its finances, there's a lot more need than there is money.
Mr. Chair, you're absolutely right, and I don't have a simple answer. There is no simple answer to that. And obviously, charitable donations cannot stand in for that basic safety net that we need. It has to support it and supplement it. And I think the answer I would give is that we need to be limited in what we do, and I hope you will open the door a little bit, but I don't want you to open the door a lot, because I think we'd end up hurting the very purposes that this is intended for if we open it too broadly. Some states have 15 checkoffs, and I think it does lose its effectiveness at that point. And I'm a strong supporter of the Chickadee Checkoff. It's been really successful, and I really appreciate those programs. It's part of my budget that I oversee. But I think that homelessness and hunger, you know, when we talk about the impact of the recession, those are about the most basic things that affect people. I mean, if they don't have a job, or if they've lost hours, or if they've lost their home. Those are the most basic fundamentals. And so it seems to me that these deserve a special place of recognition. And I just think that these are unique and that Minnesotans would feel that way, that they would feel this is a way they can really make a difference. We're not asking for any money from the tax committee. We're just saying let's sort of focus on the two sides of things that are so fundamental to Minnesota. One is our wildlife and our natural resources that all we all value so much, but the other is just a really fundamental support for people who just can't even, don't even have food to put on the table.
Senator Squay.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. Senator Anderson, I think the risk of getting more of these checkoffs than we can deal with is real. I don't remember, a couple of years ago, maybe even when Senator Pogermiller was chair, I think we had a dozen of them. And they were all worthwhile, good ideas. And you look at what's happened with the in the Transportation Committee with the license plates. We started out with the loon plate or whatever it's called. And, you know, I think we're up to 35 license plates now. And so the risk is real. And we'll have to kind of figure this out because it is a really neat idea. But I think the risk of being overwhelmed with requests in the future would something we'd have to try to figure out what we're going to deal with.
Mr. Kennedy?
I'd like to just say one thing, if I can weigh in here. I believe it is because of the economic times why we should consider this. Okay, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, 5 years ago, there wouldn't be as great of a need. Now you have constituents in your districts who are in need and need help. Why not make it an easy way for taxpayers to simply elect to give money to help them? I understand your concern, but I would say, look, I mean, the economic times right now require some action. Or you can decide to look the other way, and it doesn't require maybe inaction. I hope that you'll decide to support this and move forward. There are a lot of people who need this and who need our help.
Mr. Kennedy, I think our concern is the state's budget situation in the next biennium is worse than the current one. And programs are going to be reduced further by the next governor and the next legislature. Funding is going to be reduced. Some programs are going to be eliminated. And more people are going to come here looking for some other avenue to replace lost state money. Times are going to get tougher around the Capitol, not easier. I think that's our concern going forward.
Well, it may be possible to draw the line after this. And you know what? If it doesn't work out, it can also be rescinded and taken away. But I really believe in the merit of the bill. And I think, yes, the idea is neat and simple. Where you draw the line as a committee and so forth, I understand that's a difficult task. And with the probably further cuts down the road, we understand that. We're still asking you to move forward, please, for this, for the people in need.
Mr. Chair,
thanks, Seth.
You know, I certainly think we should not be having 15 checkoffs in the future or anything like that, or maybe not beyond two. But I guess I find it kind of hard to believe that there would be something coming along that would be more important than this. So I guess I kind of think we should do it and do it just like the chickadee checkoff. And then we can say no for the third one.
Senator Langseth, you're really good at saying no in the bonding committee.
Well, I said no to three-fourths of the requests, so yeah.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Senator Squay.
Mr. Chair, I do have an idea rolling around in my head. I'm hesitant to suggest it when Senator Anderson is sitting here, but maybe we could replace the current one with this one.
Mr.
Chair, Anderson, what do you think?
You get me in really big trouble if you suggest if I were, I wouldn't want to choose between those. It's really successful, and honestly, I think, I know there's a little concern among the wildlife supporters. They quietly said to me they don't want to be against this, but they're a little concerned about losing money. I think, again, that we could, the beauty of these two proposals, and I didn't have anything to do with the chickadee checkoff, that was before my time, but I really think this would attract a different set of donors. Not that there aren't a lot of people who care about both. There are. But I think this would expand the donations. And we don't want to reduce the donations that already are there. That's a really fantastic positive thing about Minnesotans. You know, when you look at the sales tax amendment that in 2008, whether you supported it or not, 1.6 million Minnesotans voted for it. And so people really are willing to pay a little bit extra to protect our natural resources in Minnesota. And that's something we should really support and value. But so I wouldn't want to touch that. But I think Senator Langseth is right. This is so fundamental and this is unique. And I'd be supportive if you want to put something in law that says we can only have two checkoffs at a time. But I want these two.
Notwithstanding. Senator Anderson, thank you.
Thank you very much.
And thank you to all the testifiers. Chair lays over Senate File 2688 as amended.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate
thank
your
you.
Time
thank
and
you.
The discussion.
Tentatively, members, our next committee hearing is next Thursday. I announced yesterday that if you want to have a bill considered for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill, it needs to have a number by Monday because we plan one additional committee hearing, and then we'll start putting a bill together. Committee's adjourned.